Welcome to Jurisdiction, the International Intellectual Property Law Podcast for March 2015. I'm your host, Don Cameron of Breskin & Parr LLP in Toronto, Canada. We hope you'll find this podcast informative, but it should not be taken as legal advice. The opinions expressed are solely those of the participants. Last summer, in the case of Allison CLS Bank, the Supreme Court of the United States yet again decided that a certain computer-related business method was not patentable subject matter on the basis that it was merely an abstract idea. The court provided slightly more direction than they did in Bilski, but there's lots of room for head-scratching. Since Alice, the Federal Circuit has decided two cases, Ultramercial against Hulu and DDR Holdings against Hotels.com, and they add a bit more meat to the bones of Alice. Elliot Cook is a lawyer with the Reston, Virginia office of Finnegan Henderson, Faribault, Garrett, and Dunner LLP. Elliot is involved in a variety of patent litigation, post-grant patent challenges, patent prosecution, and patent monetization. Elliot's done a considerable amount of work in the area of computer-related technologies and business software. I spoke with Elliot from his office in Reston, Virginia. Hello, Elliot.
Hello, Don.
So Allison CLS has been making big news in the United States. Could you give us a brief overview of the case?
Sure. This was a landmark case in the United States addressing patent eligibility under Section 101. And for a brief summary, the patent owner, Alice, owned several patents directed to computerized schemes for mitigating settlement risk. So these were patents in the financial services area. And they generally recited three types of claims. There were method claims, system claims, and computer readable medium claims. The method claims were directed to exchanging obligations between parties. The system claims were designed to carry out that method. The computer readable medium claims included program code for directing an exchange of obligations. And basically, the critical issue in the case, at least as phrased by the writ of certiorari, was whether the claims to the computer implemented inventions, including claims to systems and machines, processes, and items of the manufacturer, were directed to patent eligible subject matter under Section 101, or instead were directed to patent ineligible abstract ideas.
And what did the court decide?
The court issued a unanimous opinion. It was written by Justice Thomas, and it found that the patents were invalid for claiming ineligible subject matter. There was a concurrence by Justice Sotomayor, which was joined by Justices Ginsburg and Breyer, but the opinion was unanimous.
And what makes Alice such a noteworthy decision?
Well, I think it's important because the court did clarify, at least somewhat, the law on when a claim for an abstract idea will nonetheless be patent eligible, specifically in the area of software or financial services type inventions.
How did the court evaluate the patent eligibility of the claims?
Well, in the case, the court relied heavily on the framework it set forth in its earlier decision in Mayo Collaborative Services versus Prometheus Laboratories. That case, unlike the Alice case, was directed to the natural phenomenon exception to patent eligibility. The Alice case was directed to the abstract idea exception. In the Mayo case, what was at issue was a drug reaction. And the question there was whether the claim recited eligible or ineligible subject matter. And there, specifically, the issue was whether the claims were directed to a natural phenomenon.
So what was the test that was applied in Mayo Collaborative Services?
In that case, the test was applied in two parts. The first part was asking whether the claim is directed to an ineligible concept, such as a natural phenomenon, a law of nature, or an abstract idea. And then the second part of the test was, if that is the case, does the claim recite sufficiently more, sufficient additional elements to make the claim one to an application of the concept as opposed to covering the concept itself? So what's interesting about the court's reliance on the Mayo decision is that Mayo was directed to the natural phenomenon exception to patentability, whereas in the Alice case, it was the abstract idea exception. It was noteworthy that the court in Alice applied the same framework as set forth in Mayo to assess the patentability of software inventions.
So what was the result of applying the Mayo test in the Alice case?
When the court applied the two-step Mayo framework to the Alice case, it first found that the claims were directed to an abstract idea, specifically the abstract idea of intermediated settlement. And then based on that, it also found that the claims did not recite significantly more than that abstract idea. Instead, they only recited generic computer functionality, which did not add enough to convey patent eligibility.
Now, I understand there was some argument over the meaning of what is an abstract idea as an ineligible concept. What did the court ultimately decide?
Well, this is an issue that practitioners still grapple with, even after Alice. In that case, the court rejected Alice's definition of an abstract idea as simply a pre-existing fundamental truth that exists in principle apart from any human action. Instead, in Alice, the court held that the claims there and also in Bilski, which also addressed a financial services type invention, were directed to abstract ideas because they're fundamental economic practices. So in a sense, that's a point of commonality between Bilski and Alice. They were both directed to financial services type inventions.
Now, in Alice, the court seemed to do the bulk of the heavy lifting in the second step of the Mayo framework, which has been called the significantly more test. How did the court implement this step?
So the court divided the significantly more test into two parts. First, looking at the claim elements separately, and then second, looking at the claim elements as a whole.
And what did the court say under the first part, the claim elements separately part?
In Alice, the court did look at the elements separately, and it found that they provided basic computer functions. Each of the claim elements was directed to the use of a computer to perform basic functions that were known in the industry, such as electronic bookkeeping, storing in memory, and basic features like that.
And the second part, claims as a whole?
As to the second part, the court found that the claim simply recited the concept of an intermediated settlement as performed by a generic computer. The computer did not add more beyond that. Also, the claims don't, in that case, they did not improve the functioning of the computer itself, nor did they create an improvement in any other technology or technical fields. Instead, the court held that requiring generic computer implementation did not transform an abstract idea into a patent-eligible invention.
So did the court leave open any safe harbors for future software patents?
They did. The safe harbors are applicable when the invention either improves the functioning of the computer itself or it affects an improvement in another technology or another technical field.
This sounds a little like the European technical problem, technical solution as a safe harbor. Any comments on that?
I think there are some parallels. I think what we're seeing in this case is a reaction to a financial services type invention that was implemented using merely computer-based equipment, generic computer equipment, something that did not reside inherently in a technical field itself. So in that sense, it is somewhat similar to the European test, and that the subject matter or the field that the invention resides in is being considered as part of the eligibility test.
So can you give some practical suggestions for patent agents and attorneys?
Sure. I think one thing that we're seeing after Alice, there's a lot of uncertainty by U.S. patent examiners as to what to do with applications that may or may not recite abstract ideas. We're seeing abstract ideas characterized by the examiners in a broad way sometimes, in a way that's not substantiated sometimes with reasoning or analysis or facts. We're also seeing a big difference in terms of where the cases end up within the patent office. Some art units are much more favorable in terms of 101 than other art units. So I think one thing practitioners can consider is when they're drafting the claims, including the preambles, and also drafting the abstracts of invention, practitioners can consider which art unit they want the application to get into. Maybe, for example, avoiding a business method art unit and instead getting into a cryptography unit or something like that could improve the chances of overcoming the 101 issue.
So what strategy would you recommend to litigators who are defending against a patent that's similar to the one in Alice or Bilski?
Well, I think for one thing, litigators should take into account what the subject matter of the patent is. The court in Alice, for example, held that both Bilski and Alice were similar because both cases were directed to patents with fundamental economic practices being claimed. So if you're defending against a similar patent, one in the financial services field, one strategy may be to identify the principle in the claim, identify a textbook type reference to the principle, and use expert testimony to support the position that the asserted claim fails to include more than an application of the principle to a computer, a generic computer. And I think also in the United States, what we're seeing after Alice is the courts are a little more receptive to addressing one-on-one issues at the early stages of litigation. So one thing practitioners should certainly consider is that as a matter of avoiding discovery costs, consider whether the court is likely to give weight to a Section 101 motion, whether brought as a motion to dismiss, a motion for judgment on the pleadings, or even a motion for summary judgment, hopefully from the accused infringer's perspective, all without the need for discovery or even claim construction. I think we're seeing more and more courts being receptive to that type of early disposition.
Now, the Court of Appeal of the Federal Circuit has had to apply Alice in a case called Ultramershal. Can you give us some background about what the Ultramershal case was about?
Sure. In the Ultramershal case, the technology was basically a form of advertising. It was a type of advertising where the user got to see an ad, and after the user saw the ad, they could see some free content online. So that basically the price of the free content was watching the advertisement.
Now, I understand this is the third time the Federal Circuit looked at this patent. The first two times they said it was patent eligible. This time, after the Alice decision, they decided it wasn't. How did the Federal Circuit apply Alice in Ultramershal?
So in Ultramershal, the Federal Circuit again used the two-part Mayo test. It first found that it was an abstract idea and the claims having no particular or concrete tangible form. The claims recited an abstract idea of basically using ads as a form of currency. You know, you get some free content, but it's the price for that you have to watch an advertisement. The court did not articulate a test for determining whether a claim embodies an abstract idea, but it did conclude that the claims at issue were directed to an abstract idea. The court found that although some features added a degree of particularity, the concept embodied in a majority of the limitations described only an abstract idea, using an advertisement for currency. The court also found that the components in the claims were basically routine. There were no unusual or unique components that would render the claims sufficiently concrete. And also, for some software patents embracing sufficiently concrete subject matter that might pass the test, the court still recognized that all inventions use abstract ideas at some level, but claims of that type need to recite something that's more concrete, more specific, and not abstract. So, in that case, the Ultramershal case, the Federal Circuit concluded that the patent at issue did not claim significantly more than the abstract idea of offering media content in exchange for viewing an advertisement. The other functionality in the claims was nothing more than basically routine data gathering and pre-solution activities, which were ineligible for patenting. And each of the steps in the claims merely recited having a practitioner implement the abstract idea with routine conventional activities, which was, again, insufficient to transform the subject matter into something that was patent eligible.
I understand that some of the steps in the Ultramershal process were novel in that they had not been used in this art before. Did the court explain how novel features can constitute a routine activity?
The court did not provide much illumination on that point. It's still a point that practitioners have to grapple with. In the Ultramershal case, we saw claims that did have some novel components, but what the court emphasized was that they were directed to a form of advertising more generally that was known in the art for many years. So even though there were some points of novelty, they did not factor into the court's analysis.
This all sounds a lot like a novelty or obviousness analysis when they're looking at whether steps are routine or conventional. Is that now part of a Section 101 analysis?
I think practitioners debate that, but there's good reason to think that, at least in part, the novelty or obviousness analysis does have some relevance in a 101 analysis. I think we've been seeing that ever since the Bilski case that the Supreme Court came out with. And now more explicitly in Alice, one of the things that we have to look for in the second step of Mayo is whether there's an inventive step, an inventive concept. And it's hard to think that if we're looking for an inventive concept or an inventive step, that's really a separate analysis from obviousness. So I think for those who claim that there is a blending of the concepts here, a blending of the legal standards. I think that's a fair argument.
Now, am I correct that the court also said that having a process carried out over the internet does not limit the use of the abstract idea to a particular technology or machine?
Yes, that's what the court found. The court found that merely doing the process using the internet was not sufficient to limit it to a particular technology or to a particular machine. This is similar to the court's analysis dealing with generic computer equipment. Generic computer equipment that implements a method is not sufficient to convey patent eligibility. Instead, as we talked about before, something like improving the computer itself or one of the other types of features that the court addressed would be necessary.
And I understand in Ultramershal, the court reverted to its machine or transformation test. How did the court apply that test in Ultramershal?
Well, yeah, I think that's right. It's important to first mention that the court was not applying the machine or transformation test as rigidly as it did before Bilski. But the court still did reference the test, and as it should, because in Bilski, the court said that the machine or transformation test is one fair test to apply, one test among many. So in Ultramershal, the court said that it could be a useful test to apply in assessing the second step of Alice. They also said that the claims at issue in the Ultramershal case were not tied to a particular machine. They failed that test because they did not create a novel machine. If anything, the internet was considered to be a general purpose machine. Merely using the internet generally is not sufficient to put us within the realm of a specific machine. And further, the court held that manipulations of public or private legal obligations were not physical objects or substances and are not representative of physical objects or substances. So in that regard, these were more abstract concepts and insufficient to provide patent eligibility, even under the machine or transformation test.
So I understand everything isn't doom and gloom from the Federal Circuit. They have actually found a patent to be have patent eligible subject matter. Can you tell us about the DBR case from December?
Sure. In the DBR Holdings versus Hotels.com case, the Federal Circuit addressed patent eligibility again after the Alice decision. In that case, there were patents that generally related to creating a composite web page, and there were several web page makers that were sued as defendants in that case. The court, after discussing a recent case law under 101, including Alice, acknowledged that the claims were similar to the patent ineligible claims found in other cases, in the sense that they all involved both the computer and the internet, in other words, generic type computer components. But the court went on to distinguish the current claims in the DDR case because they claimed a solution that was necessarily rooted in computer technology in order to overcome a problem specifically arising in the realm of computer networks. The court explained that the standard internet communications protocols introduce a problem that does not arise in, for example, the brick-and-mortar context, the physical context. Instead, the issue in that case, the DDR case, was claims that were really rooted in computer technology. So it was not a case of taking an idea that existed in an abstract sense and applying it using computers. Instead, it was a case where the invention itself inherently dealt with computers. And in that case, the court found that the claims did survive a 101 analysis and were patent eligible.
So how are patent examiners dealing with Alice on a daily basis?
I think what we're seeing right now in the patent office is a lot of hesitance by examiners to deal with Section 101 on a substantive basis. We're seeing a lot of rejections that are quite slim in their analysis, rejections that are based on, you know, for example, the preamble of the claim being the abstract idea. And we're also seeing a lot of hesitation by examiners in engaging in interviews to discuss the merits of 101 rejections. So one strategy the applicants are taking is to respond on the merits to these rejections and perhaps pursue an appeal so that over time, as the standard for review becomes more clear under 101, that patents can be evaluated then at that point.
And how are the district courts handling early dispositive motions regarding Section 101?
I think what we're seeing in that regard is somewhat of a geographic division. Some courts, particularly in the Northern District of California, also in Delaware, are being relatively liberal about granting motions under 101 even early motions, motions to dismiss, motions on the pleading, and some summary judgment motions before claim construction and before much discovery. And on the other hand, we're seeing other courts, some in the middle of the country, some in Texas, for example, that are being much more hesitant to reject patents, whether at the early stages or even later in a case under Section 101. But I think one general conclusion is that we're seeing more motions under 101 and more being granted generally throughout the U.S. courts.
So looking into your crystal ball, what's next for computer-related inventions and business method patents?
Well, I think when we talk about software-implemented inventions, we're really talking about numerous types of fields. We're talking about anything from software per se, database software, to software for operating heavy machinery or aircraft engines, things of that type. So I think what we're going to see is a continued evolution in the types of technologies that are implemented using software. There's going to be new and different fields within which computer-implemented inventions and business method patents are found. And I think we're going to see more and more practitioners with these new inventions pushing the limits both at the patent office, in the district courts, and all the way up on appeal as well before the Federal Circuit and the Supreme Court. So what we hope to see in coming months and perhaps years is more clarity from the court about precisely what it means to be an abstract idea. How is that test really carried out in practice? How do we know if something is an abstract idea or not? And then also a little bit more clarity about the inventive concept prong of the Mayo test. What does it mean to be an inventive concept? What qualifies and what does not? So I think really at all levels throughout U.S. patent practice, we hope to get a little bit more clarity in coming months and years, but we are excited as the numbers of inventions and the variety continues to grow.
Elliot, thanks very much for these insights.
Don, thank you very much. It was my pleasure.
Elliot Cook is a lawyer with the Western Virginia office of Finnegan, Henderson, Faribault, Garrett, and Dunner, LLP. For further information on the Alice, Ultramershal, and DDR cases, and for information on other jurisdiction podcasts, please visit iplawpodcast.com. You've been listening to Jurisdiction, the International Intellectual Property Law Podcast. I'm Don Cameron of Breskin & Parr, LLP in Toronto, Canada. Thank you for listening.